Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It is Thursday evening. You are listening to LA Talk Radio, and this is The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, your host, sitting in the studio tonight with the lovely and vivacious Bobby Jean Bell and her husband Jim, recently returned from Denver, Colorado.
Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm finer than frogs here. We just had Ronan in here, our engineer, giving us cough drops because we're both in here hacking and wheezing. And I don't know who's going to fall over first. I think it's going to be Bobby.
Not good for radio.
No. Hey, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall.
Old Town Newhall.
Man, one of these days, that's just going to roll off my tongue. And Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we have some ads we're going to be doing for them a little bit later. And right now, how are you doing, Bobby? How was your week?
My week was great. I was reading some really wonderful books and listening to some great music and gearing up for tonight's shows, the morning show and tonight's radio show. And then next Thursday night, we kick off our first concert of the year. And we're very excited about that. We've got a group coming in, a trio of gentlemen called The Cowboy Way. And each one has a stellar career all on his own, but when they get together, they make wonderful music. Coming in from New Mexico to perform next Thursday night.
Why don't you tell us who one of them is?
Well, one of them will be joining us later, Jim Jones. Yay! Will be calling in from New Mexico. And this morning on EquestrianLegacy.net on Campfire Cafe radio show, we talked with Doug Figgs, who is another one of the gentlemen in the group. And Doug is releasing a brand new CD this Monday or Tuesday, and we premiered about 9 tracks off that CD this morning. And he was named Songwriter of the Year by the Western Music Association in 2015, and one of his songs was named Song of the Year in 2015. So, and Jim Jones was Performer of the Year in 2014.
Right.
So these are really, really talented guys that are going to be with us next week.
And Jim, of course, has been a guest on the Writer's Block.
Yes, he has. He's also an author. He's written a trilogy of wonderful books, and I think he's getting ready. I think he's got something else on the boards.
He's always got something on the board.
We'll find out. We'll talk to him later.
Find out a little bit more tonight. Well, we've got tonight. We have a gentleman that I'm not too real sure if. Well, I'm absolutely certain some of you have read some of his works. He was born in Sparta, which is Upper Cumberland, the region of Tennessee. His grandfather was a booze runner.
Yes.
And did some time in the clink. And his family seems to still be PO'd that they lost the Civil War. For a time when he was a kid, he polished floors in Kmart.
In a Kmart, yeah.
I used to do the same thing, but I was in the Army, so. He seriously started writing when he was 19. He's got a BA in history, a minor in English. He's a prolific author. He's got a PhD in history. He's currently a professor at Tennessee Tech. Would you welcome to the Writer's Block, please, Mr. Troy D. Smith?
Yeah.
Troy, you with us?
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You said, I'm talking tonight to a gentleman, but I'm not sure. I thought you were going to be casting aspersions on my character.
Actually, what I was doing, I was referring to Bobby's husband, Jim.
Well, a lot of people are too sure after they've talked with me for a little while.
Well, the bookie tells me that you don't like talking on the phone.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that on Facebook? Yeah,
no, actually she didn't show me. She just told me.
Well, we're happy that you're able to join us, and that is the beauty of Biphone, is we're able to speak with people all across the country that just aren't close by here in L.A.,
right.
And it allows us to get to know you a little bit. So
right.
Thank you for joining us tonight.
So did you tell all your friends?
I'm delighted to virtually be here.
Oh, good. Did you tell all your friends you're going to be on the radio tonight?
I told them that I forgot.
Well, yeah, apparently you did.
I didn't forget. It's like we're in a different time zone, but it's not that different. I got off track about it with Wednesday for a little while.
It's not different calendar days.
But that's no reflection on how I've been spending my time.
Yeah, you don't lose a day going east. At least you never used to.
Now, we hear there's big snow coming your way. Are you ready?
That's what I hear. In fact, I saw earlier that there's a state of disaster possibly going to be declared, so we'll see.
Well,
it's going to start in the west and move east, so I'm not sure how long it'll take to get where I am.
Wow.
We're sitting here suffering through 75 degree weather.
I know,
weather and
very
sunshine.
Mild day today.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's very tough. Yeah.
I know, it's tough on all of us Southern California people. But it's the penalty you pay when you live here in SoCal.
We have other challenges.
We do. No water.
I'm sure.
No water. Hey, let's get into one of your books. I just finished today. What's it called?
Bound for the Promised Land.
Bound for the Promised Land.
Oh, my gosh.
All right.
You know what? The story just totally intrigued me. To take him from a slave to through the Cuban War and then to retirement, mm-hmm. absolutely was just a wonderful story. And I don't know, where did you get that story? Who did you steal it from? Come on, really.
Well, there is a story behind how I got the story.
Okay, then.
When I was probably maybe 20 years old, 19 or 20, and I was traveling with a friend of mine. We went up to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, where he's from, to go whitewater rafting. And we went to his church, and the preacher that Sunday morning was talking about liberty in the sons of God. And it's not a reflection on him at all, but my mind started really wandering. And I started thinking about, wow, liberty and freedom, that means so many things to so many different people. And then, being a history nerd already, I started thinking about the Civil War and slavery and the way that a lot of former slaves had envisioned a certain type of liberty and freedom that they thought was coming that didn't quite come the way that they hoped it would, as we all know.
Right.
Something that took a long time. And so that's what got me started about this story, basically telling the story about this guy born into slavery and his lifelong search for, not just for freedom, but to kind of figure out what freedom is. And it was several years before I wrote the thing, because I actually tried to start writing it then. I just started trying to write, and I wrote a chapter, and God, did it suck. So I just put that aside and waited until I had written for long enough on things that were not as important to me
mm-hmm.
that I felt like I was more capable to do justice to the story that I wanted to tell.
Well, I mean, I think that you put a lot of references to religion. And I kind of see where the main character, Albert Mann, really is really confused. And he never, ever, ever admits the fact that he's religious or not religious. He just says, I don't believe. And I just think that's really, really, really a good point to make, is a lot of people don't necessarily not believe. They just don't know.
Right. And in Albert's case, he has other people in his life that are religious.
Extremely religious. For instance, his wife, Isabel. She's very religious, and she incidentally is a Seminole. So,
I had a friend who read the book, who is Muslim, and told me he's African American and he's Muslim. He told me when he had read the book that he'd been surprised because the way things were going, he thought that Alfred was going to have some kind of conversion, but it was really not a religious. Even though there's a lot of spirituality there,
right. Right.
He said, I'm not sure you're going to turn him into, like, you know, a really over-the-top Christian. And I was kind of hoping he turned him into a Muslim, but I didn't turn him into anything other than who he was.
Well, he kind of turned himself into.
He tried to figure out who he was.
Right, right. I mean, there's a lot of bloodshed in this book, I do have to admit.
Yes.
But you know what? I'm no one to talk. I do exactly the same thing.
Troy, when I first started reading Western fiction several years ago, I began by reading Jim Christina's books, who is sitting across from me. And I had been mostly a Western nonfiction reader up until that point. But I began to be very interested in Western fiction. And so I kind of started with Jim's books, which were salty and somewhat bloody. And it took me a little while to, you know, kind of get accustomed to it. And now, mm-hmm. of course, I don't really have any challenges to speak of because I'm understanding more and more of the genre. But I have to say, with what Jim just said, I had a little challenge with, I did personally have a little challenge with Bound for Promised Land as well as Wolf Creek. But they're both so mm-hmm. captivating, and you give us such a, I would say, true slice. This is not the Romantic West. This is the gritty. This is the gritty story, and it does often get cleaned up, and we don't always see it. Mm-hmm. And you really give us, you really bring it right into our faces.
And I have to tell you,
I'm glad that I was successful because that was my goal.
Well, I have to tell you that I am an absolute 100% dyed-in-the-wool cavalry buff, and mm-hmm. you nailed the 10th Cavalry on the head. You really truly
That's
did.
Good to hear.
I'm sorry?
I said, that's good to hear.
Yeah, I did one I called Bugles in the Sun about the 7th Cavalry. And it was you know, it outlined what they wore and, you know, what they did and how many bugle calls they had during the day and stuff. But you really hit the way that these Buffalo soldiers really felt about how proud they were to be in the Army and that mm-hmm. to be accepted for who they were in the Army. And that was
right.
That,
and there was so much going on there,
and there really was, and that meant a lot to me, having, you know, being in the Army for so long as I was. So that was really kind of cool, and I just thought that the whole idea of the being a Buffalo soldier was really a nice deal.
Well, while we're talking a little bit about historical accuracy, it would seem to me that that's really important to you. Can you talk a little bit about that, and also how you do your research?
Well, for that particular book, which came out about 10 years ago, but I'm still touting it because it's the thing I'm proudest of, I spent a good 6 months doing research before I ever started writing. And I read everything I could get my hands on about the 10th Cavalry and the cavalry in general and about life on the plantation. And there's this thing, you may have heard of it from the 1930s, the WPA slave narratives, back when FDR was had all these things going to try to get people employed and occupied, right? The WPA, the Works Progress Administration, actually hired unemployed newspaper writers and teachers throughout the South, and as well as in Kansas and Oklahoma, to go out and interview every living ex-slave wow. that they could find. So I spent a lot of time just going through those accounts of asking these people who were elderly in the 1930s and were young, you know, in the Civil War and before, about what life was like. And I think that helped me to get a more accurate voice than just reading history books.
Absolutely.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Now,
more, you know, my context now when I'm writing, because I am also a historian. I didn't have a PhD when I wrote that book. I'm doing a lot of research anyway. So my research focuses on Oklahoma, so a lot of the stuff that I write fiction-wise has to do with that as well. I've got upcoming in this spring, I think April for both of them, I've got on the one hand a chapter about the history of Oklahoma and Indian Territory in the Oxford Handbook of American Indian History, and I've got a short story in the new Lone Ranger anthology from Moonstone Books. So it's totally different ends of the spectrum there. But the research and familiarity with the area both come in, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for those of you who think you may want to call in and talk to Troy, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And we are, of course, speaking with Troy D. Smith, not to be confused with Troy A. Smith,
who we had on a couple weeks ago.
Who I think there was a large confusion going on when we first booked Troy on the show.
Oh, that's right.
Do you
There's
have
too many Troy Smiths around?
You have written a tremendous body of work, short stories as well as novels. Do you have a favorite fictional character that you've created in that vast library of work?
Well, actually, it would be Alfred in uh-huh. this book, as well as the two characters that I write for in the Wolf Creek series, both the Seminole Scout, Charlie Blackfeather, and the Marshal, Marshall Gardner, who's an arrogant, pompous individual. And that's totally made up. I don't know where I even get that stuff from.
You did some research.
But I do enjoy it, going into that, you know, going that direction and unleashing all the sarcasm and what have you.
Did the block for that character come from Isabel's father, who is also a Creole or Seminole scout?
Well, actually, my historical specialty is interactions between American Indians and African Americans in both the South and the West. So Seminoles, in particular, I've done a lot of research on. So I thought it was kind of tied in with Isabel and her family. But I really thought it would be cool to be able to bring some things through Charlie Blackfeather the same way that I did through Alfred in Bound for the Promised Land that a lot of readers would not have known about, you know, the backstory of the Black Seminoles. So I can kind of do my history lectures without people knowing their history lectures.
Oh, there you go.
Fun.
I like it. What motivates you to write?
Well, I got started, and I just can't stop. I realize now, in retrospect, I've always been a storyteller. I just didn't realize it. But talking about those years that I spent buffing floors, particularly at these Kmart stores when I was about 19, they would lock me in there for 12 hours.
Right.
You know, and I was paid by the job, not the hour, and it took about 2 hours to do the job, but I was locked in there. And so I read everything that I could find to read, and I actually read all the Louis L'Amour books that they had, and then I started thinking, wow, how would I have told that story differently? And just to entertain myself, I started reimagining different plots and writing them out. And I had written my first novel before it ever occurred to me that I could actually get someone else to read it. I mean, I was just doing it for my own entertainment. And once I had done that, I don't know, I feel like it opened the floodgates to this authorial voice that I had and that I guess not everybody has, but all authors have, in which you can sort of invest yourself through pieces of yourself in different stories and different things you talk about and sort of get out there the things that you think are important to you, like Bound for the Promised Land. That's the reason it's still so important to me, is because the concepts are concepts that are important. And it just reached a point that after I had done that for a while, I felt so comfortable. But today I feel like if someone knows me really well, but they haven't read any of my fiction, they don't really know me. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, I can see that, yeah.
It's just part of who I am.
Huh. Well, you know, not to throw something back into my corner again, but I find that I really like writing bad guys. I love writing bad guys, and I challenge myself every book to come up with a bad guy that's worse than the last one. And I think Bobby will probably attest, my latest bad guy is like a humdinger.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. He's so bad, he's the devil.
He's close to it.
There's some fun in that. Yes.
Hey, we hate to take your time, but we do have to run a little real quick commercial, and then we'll be back to you in a little less than a minute, if you'll hang on with us.
All right.
Okay, then.
Target Freight Truckload, TFM, is a division of Target Freight Management and, quite honestly, the finest truckload company in the United States. If you are looking for a reputable freight company for full truckloads that get to you 100% of the time, call Target Freight TFM Truckload. Call them today. Get that pencil or get out your iPhone. Get it in there. 1-844-653-7789. Tell them you heard this on the Writer's Block, and they'll even have a little something special just for you. 1-844-653-7789. Target Freight Truckload.
Woo! And you know, the neat part about it is I had the president of Target Freight sitting in my office yesterday morning.
Well, you were going to bring him with you tonight, weren't you?
No, he's already back in Pennsylvania. He wanted to beat the snow.
No.
But we played a little bit of the show, and then we played your ad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and he's just sitting there, he's looking at me, and his mouth is hanging open. He goes, wow, that was really good. So,
oh, that's fun. Well, we sure appreciate their sponsoring the show.
We really do. And again, if you really want to call in and talk to Troy, it's 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And we're back again with Troy D. Smith, who's incidentally, his website is TroyDwayneSmith.com. Interesting. .com.
Yeah. I have a question. Can I ask a question? Okay, so I since you did all of that reading, I thought that was such a wonderful story about Kmart and about reading at Kmart. Do you have some favorite authors that you look to, and if so, who are they?
Well, of course I do. I think that everyone does and should probably. One of my most favorite writers alive today is Larry McMurtry.
Yes.
And I love most of his stuff. Some of his stuff, maybe I think he could have worked with a little bit more, but most of it is just sublime to me. And for inspiration, I just randomly pick up Lonesome Dove anywhere in the book and start reading. And the language and the characterization and everything that's in there is, well, I get this feeling with him and a few other writers where it's this sort of, wow, this is a thing of beauty and I love it. And at the same time, I'm so jealous that I wish I could do it that well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's right up there. And more foundational, I guess, I really like Mark Twain. Mm-hmm. I think that Mark Twain had a big influence on me. And, maybe not someone you'd expect, but Stan Lee, when I was a kid.
Oh, Marvel Comics.
Marvel Comics. Yeah, because, you know, with Stan Lee and the characters that he created, they were different than previous comic book characters because they had personalities, you know?
Right.
And he's invested so much time in the characterization, and that's what I tried to do.
Well, and they hold up, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, I'm looking at Crossroad Blues here. And
yeah.
It's an interesting premise, and it's off kind of offbeat for you because this one takes place in 1957 Nashville.
Yeah.
And where did this idea come from? Because I'm going to read this book. Not today.
Where did the idea come from?
Yeah.
I was when I was in college, and I was a late bloomer, I actually started college the year that Bound for the Promised Land came out. I took an English course about African-American literature, and I stumbled on the theme of the blues detective. And so I thought, wow, that sounds like fun. I'd like to have one of those. I came up with a story, but also as part of the process of writing Bound for the Promised Land, I really got into the blues in a big way, using kind of as background music when I was writing. And so by the end of it, I was a big fan, a big lover of the blues. And so for Crossroad Blues, if you can say that Bound for the Promised Land was about liberty, Crossroad Blues, even though it's a crime drama, it's a mystery, it's about the blues and what it means both musically and in life.
Hmm.
And so I ran with it, had a great time. There's a distant connection because one of the, the protagonist's great aunt was the grandchild of one of Alfred's buddies in the book.
Oh.
It was sort of tying things very tangentially together.
Oh.
But I had a lot of good, I had a lot of fun writing, and I also wrote a short story using that same character, the same protagonist, and I plan to write several more of those.
Huh. Do you ever get writer's block?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. It's not fun. But the good thing is, and maybe this is why I have written so many things, when that happens, then I just take whatever it is that's blocking me and ignore it for a while and go work on something else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
We've heard that answer before, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you ignore it and then you go work on something else. Yeah.
Do you, what I do is I'll write scenes and leave them aside, and then when it comes to time to use them, I'll work on them a little bit and just cut and paste them in. Do you do that as well, or do you just keep going straight on through?
I tell you what I do is I picture the conclusion. I picture the very final scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then I work toward it and see what I have to do to get there.
Mm.
In fact, Crossroads Blues, and this doesn't give anything at all away about the plot, But the very first thing I thought of for Crossroads Blues was, at the end, my hero is going to be standing there, and somebody's going to say, that was poetic justice, and he's going to say, no, man, that's just the blues.
Oh, wow.
Oh, how
interesting. What does that mean, and how do I get there?
Yeah, no kidding.
How interesting.
I love that.
Do you outline as you begin to figure out how you're going to get, you know, back to the beginning, or what's your process?
Well, I'm a pretty OCD person, so I do outline. I don't outline extensively. I have sort of a loose outline. So as to what the main thrust of each chapter is going to be. And so I construct that to figure out then how to get to that ending. I know I have a lot of friends who just start writing with a vague idea and just push through and see what happens. And I actually tried that a couple of times, and it was disastrous for me. To each his own, really, I think, in that regard. But I do sort of tend to outline things. Another thing I do is, if you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs personality test, this thing has been in use for years. Sometimes the military and different employers use it to get an idea of what your personality is. Breaks everything down into 16 basic ones. Is I figure out what my main character's personalities are. And then that way I have an idea of how they would act. And it doesn't mean they have to act that way, but if they act out of character, I know I have to have a reason for it. Otherwise, it's going to be jarring to the readers.
That's really interesting.
I do that, and then I think about my main characters. I ask myself, what do they want, and why can't they get it?
Uh-huh. Huh. Well, you know, you have a quote in one of your bios, and I found about six of them, so...
And everyone's longer than the last one.
Exactly. I'm holding in my hand a three-pager. What does that tell you? You say, I don't write about things that happen to people. I write about people that things happen to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
That's my motto.
Yeah? Yeah, mantra should be, I write about people who make things happen.
No, that's good, too.
There you go. Feel free to use it.
I read about people that had really interesting things happen to them.
But, of course, my point is the characters are kind of more the focus for me than the plot. And other people work differently and different, you know, readers like different things, but that's kind of how I work.
Do you find your characters driving your story? Write the story for you?
Yeah, and I don't know if you're familiar with Robert Vaughn, the writer, alias Dick Vaughn. He's a very well-regarded Western writer, but he told a story about one time about this one secondary character. Actually, he was giving a speech about it. This one secondary character kept taking over the story, right? Uh-huh. Which happens to all of us, and so somebody said, how did you work with that? He said, well, I killed the SOB. That's one way, but I have had that happen a lot. The tone of the story totally changes because the character takes off on his own in a totally different way than I'd expected.
Now, how did you do the research for the voice of Alfred Mann, for his dialect? And, so we really so thoroughly feel like we're just right there with him. How did you research dialect?
Well, I think for one thing, I have a good ear for dialect and language. Also, I read a whole lot, and then part of it was reading through all those slave interviews. Mm-hmm. And at one point, when I was working on the book, I was a little bit concerned, because here I am, a white guy, you know, writing on this subject, that it might not sound good for me to have some of this slang. So I thought, well, I'll go back to, let's see what Alex Haley did in Roots. Mm-hmm. So I went back, and he actually used a lot more than I did. So I thought, well, okay, I can get away with it. So I'll tell you one trick I pulled, is that the various characters, when they were saying the and these and those and et cetera, I would spell it with a D instead of a TH, unless they knew how to read. And once a character learned how to read, I started using the TH, which it wouldn't really affect the way they spoke, but that's just to very subtly give the reader a sense of an extra level of sophistication.
Light bulb just went off in my head.
Yeah, got that. I know that now too from reading the book. I see that. I mean, I get that.
Right. You didn't notice it when it was happening.
Okay.
No. But now that you say it, you know, as I told Bobby, the light bulb just went off in my head.
Wow, we had an aha moment.
We just did. And as writing in first person is really hard. And now we talked to Craig Johnson a couple of weeks back. He does Longmire. And he was telling us that, no, he loves writing in first person. He says, it's just, you know, to him it really comes naturally. I've tried it. I can't do it. And yet you did it so effortlessly. But then it almost like you had a narrator in there, too.
Hmm?
It's almost like you included a narrator in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have found that the things I've written that have resonated the most with readers are things I've done in first person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is because I sort of become that character. And when I wrote a book about Champ Ferguson, the Confederate guerrilla, my family told me I was impossible to live with for about 2 years. Because I was in a Champ Ferguson frame of mind, and he just wasn't very nice. But I also feel like in those first-person things, I've written other things. I wrote a book called The Trail Brothers. It's in third person that I've had some very nice comments about. But the first-person things become a little autobiographical in kind of weird, small little ways that no one would ever know, but little pieces of myself wind up bleeding into them. Mm-hmm. Just as an example of the Champ Ferguson book, Champ had a daughter who was 14 years old at the end of the Civil War, the time he was executed, which is not a spoiler, you know, because he's a historical character. But I just kept thinking about my daughter and my relationship with her and all those scenes of where he was interacting with his daughter. I think that came through. Mm-hmm. And then just generally speaking, all the things that he did, I would just think, well, you know, what would some of my relatives from Cane Holler do or say in that circumstance and go with that? So I think it's a little bit more verisimilitude, but certainly even with third person, I work with that and I can make it work. But I don't know, things seem to flow better for me in first person.
Yeah, Craig said that he doesn't like to write in she said, he said.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
well, there's that, yeah.
Yeah, there is that.
Do you have a favorite place that you like to write when you're writing?
Any place that's quiet, really. I mean, I have an office upstairs at home, and I have an office at work for my work stuff, because I write in my day job, just different stuff, right? Some place that's not too comfortable and doesn't offer too many distractions,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Hmm.
And do you write longhand, or do you write on a computer or a laptop, or how do you capture your words?
Well, it's only been the last year or two I've started writing fiction directly on the computer. What I'd always done before is that if I were writing nonfiction, if I were writing history, I would use the computer and I would construct a lot of things, because that's really what you're doing, is you're constructing an argument and putting all the pieces together. But with my fiction, I always wrote it out longhand because it just seemed to flow out. And then when I would go back and type it, I would begin the editing process.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been using the word processor and the computer and stuff long enough now, I think, that I can get that while I'm typing it out. But it took me a while to get there. Really, it was just that being able to flow out, because before I had typed enough that I started to get kind of good at it in my own unique way, I couldn't keep up with my thoughts with the tap, you know?
Interesting. That's interesting.
Tap.
You must have.
If you don't mind,
actually, I'm sitting here thinking about sitting in my recliner with my laptop on my lap, watching Law and Order, punching out the last part of The Return.
I do put music on, but if I'm too close to the television, or if I let myself start net surfing or whatever, I'm just going to be, you know, I'll wind up just watching The Walking Dead or something.
Oh, yeah, I know. Hey, I got to run another commercial real quick, and then we'll get right back to you in less than a minute. Do you feel hang tough?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then. Hey, all you LTL shippers out there. Chances are you're looking for a great company to help you move your freight. Look no further. Target Freight Management is and should be your company of choice. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved the way you want to move it. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323. That's 1-888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com. You won't be sorry you did, and I did, and I'm not sorry, so okay. I may be a sorry individual, but I'm not sorry
call
I went to Target Freight.
Call them.
Call them today. Write that number down. Okay, you want to call in and talk to Troy Dwayne Smith? The number here is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. And a reminder that the Writer's Block is also brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, Out West
Boutique
and Cultural Center, and Old Town Newhall.
SCVOutWest.com is also,
go
where,
ahead,
we,
Bobby,
also
throw,
where we live.
Throw the commercial in there. Okay, Troy, you back with us?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, then. You started school kind of late. What prompted you to get into a BA program at 32 years old?
Well, in my misguided youth, I was a Jehovah's Witness, and so therefore didn't go to college.
Oh.
That's something that I don't even know. I've been gone from that group for 16 years now, I think. I don't know if they still do this, but they strongly discouraged to the point of almost forbidding college. So I wound up cleaning floors to support my ministry, because it's a way that you could make more than minimum wage, you know, and work nights. Then I sort of was disillusioned spiritually and left that that particular religion, found myself kind of stuck because all the things I'm good at, you can't really get a job doing without a degree. So I kind of started over in my 30s.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's, oh, you know, I mean, starting over is the key. It doesn't,
yeah,
matter when you do it.
Some of us are still trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Actually, I had another question mark today.
You belong to several very prominent writing groups, including, tell us about Western Writers of America, I think, is one of the groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Western Writers of America. I've been a member there since, I think, 1998. My first short story was published in Livermore Magazine just a little over 20 years ago. This past November was the 20th anniversary. And then I had several history articles published in Wild West Magazine. And one of those got nominated for a Spur Award, and that was enough to qualify me for membership, even though I hadn't had, at that time, enough pieces published without that to have gotten in. But, so I've been a member of that for a long time. In fact, for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been a Spur Award judge for the best biography category.
Oh, wow.
And then I won a Spur Award for Bound for the Promised Land.
Uh-huh. Right. And then the Wolf Creek series is very interesting, how this series is put together and the writers that work together. Tell us a little bit about this series.
Oh, my gosh. It's so much fun. Basically, it's sponsored by a different writing organization, Western Fictioneers, that focuses exclusively on Western fiction. And I'm the editor. We were sort of toying around with ideas of things that we could do that were collaborative, and I said, hey, why don't we do like a whole series? So what we do is we've got, at this point, over 24 authors involved. Everyone has sort of made up their own character that lives in or around the fictional town of Wolf Creek, Kansas, 1871. So each book, I, as the editor, put together a basic outline and choose the people that I'm going to invite. We have about 6 authors per book. And I do one chapter in each of the books to kind of pull things together. But basically, there's a general outline of a story, and then each chapter is written by a different author from the point of view of their character. And yet we're able to tie it all together so that it flows is effective. And having done that, we've got 13 of them out. Our 14th one should be out sometime in February. good authors being able to devote this much time to their own characters. It's these characters, I think, have really, over 13 books, grown to the point that it's a great ensemble cast, you know?
Right.
And it's just, we have probably more fun writing it than people do reading it, but we've had a lot of good comments from readers.
That's okay. That's okay. Hey, look, we're going to be running out of time here pretty quick. Why don't you give us all your information about your websites and Facebook and Twitter and email and, you know.
Well, I'm on Facebook as both Troy D. Smith, and I have an author's page also, Troy D. Smith. I have to use that D because there's too many Troy Smiths. And then, of course, my webpage you mentioned, www.troydwaynesmith.com. If I just did my initials, it would look like Troy D. Smith. And I also have a blog that I do. It's TN Wordsmith, all one word, tnwordsmith.blogspot.com. And so all those areas you can be exposed to my bloviating if you wish.
Your website is great. There are all kinds of links to past interviews that you've done. There's that page with just all the covers of all the books.
And that was great.
Like in a heartbeat, you can look and just see all the different kinds of titles and the genres. You hit on so many different genres. I would encourage our listeners to go check out your website.
And your books are all available on Amazon. And are they available and also in digital?
Yes, indeed. A lot more of them digitally than not, through Amazon, but also through Barnes & Noble.
Right.
And any place else that you can find e-books.
Do you like to read e-books, or are you still a page-turner traditionalist?
I am four square in favor of other people paying to read my e-books. I don't have a Kindle. I have the Kindle app on my computer, but I prefer reading the books. I do read some things on the Kindle application, but I'm still more likely to read the books.
I read your book on Kindle. So bound for
see there?
Yeah. Oh, you know what?
I can't downgrade it.
I wanted to mention also, the title of that book was fascinating to me because I noticed Bound for the Promise Land, not the Promised Land.
Right.
And then it
the one whole, thing to differentiate it.
The whole thing at the end of the book is explained, and that's a spoiler alert, so I'm not going to say anything more. But I love the way it came out.
After me having told you about picturing the very last scene,
right?
Maybe that'll make the right. You can see that happening
there. I really can, and I urge our listeners, if you have not read this book, Bound for the Promised Land, you need to pick it up and read it because it is really something to get your teeth into.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And Troy, it's been an absolute ball having you here. It's been just fascinating. And
I'm glad we've been there.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? As we ask all our authors after they've been on our show, if you ever want to call in and just throw something out to us while we're on the air, please feel free.
And use our Facebook page. Use our Writer's Block Radio Show Facebook page to post anything that you think would be of interest.
Absolutely.
All righty, thank you.
And you can cut and paste our logo and put it on your page if you want.
Right.
We like that.
I'll put a link on there, yeah.
we'll send you the link to tonight's interview, too.
Yes,
if
we
you
will.
You have a place to put that on your website,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there'll be some – Bobby is going to put some pictures of our ugly mugs up on the – and she always does that, so. And again, thank you so much for coming on with us. It's been real and pleasure and enjoyable having you here with
pleasure.
Us. Okay, good enough. Do take care now, Troy.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And he's gone. Well, that was fun. He was
That was very fun.
It was, yeah.
I learned all kinds of interesting
things. He's a really interesting guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here, let me play something for you real quick. Jim Jones, if you're listening, this is your cue.
Call in. If not, we'll just play you.
I am writing you tonight, dear, from East New Mexico, where the grass is getting green.
He probably forgot.
The Frio Rio.
No, I don't think so, but he did have a gig earlier tonight.
He gave up on me a long
time ago.
while I was standing in the smoke of the Brandon fire.
Mr. Jones.
Hey, how you doing?
So nice to hear you.
Hey, Jim.
How you doing, Bobby?
We're doing great. We're looking forward to having you with us next Thursday night, a week from tonight, kicking off our concert series.
We're really excited about it.
Oh, I am too, because I would more rather have you here in studio with me than over in Newhall.
I know. Can't do two at once.
Yeah, Bobby told me. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'm multitasking. I actually had a performance tonight, and it went longer than I thought, so I'm actually packing up as I'm talking to you.
Well, we're so happy that you had a couple of minutes just to call in tonight, and I understand that you've been nominated for three potential awards by the Academy of Western Artists, Male Performer of the Year, Album of the Year, Race with the Wind, and Song of the Year, Fires of Goliad. How did you feel when you read that nomination?
I was just thrilled, and I didn't expect it. I didn't have any idea about it at all. And I'm also really proud that my California friend Bruce Huntington co-wrote that song with me. And who knew that a California guy could write a song about Texas like that? But he did a great job.
Yeah, he did a good job. I just want to know how we got honored to get to know you. I mean, you're big time now.
Yeah, you know, and since we've hung out together a bit, Jim, you probably were pretty surprised that I was really somebody.
I wasn't surprised. I wasn't surprised. Yeah. I always knew that you'd amount to something, Jim.
That's what my mother always said.
And you're so humble.
Well, and if you're listening to us tonight for a first time, Jim Jones is a celebrated author as well as a songwriter and a performer, and he's been with us a couple of times at an event that we sponsor every year during the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival called the Buckaroo Bookshop, where he sat like right across from or next to Jim Christina.
Yes, he did.
Tonight's host. So kind of fun to get to hear you sing. It's not something that we get to do at the bookshop.
Well, that's been a couple of years we did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and your cousin's with a really good friends of mine too.
My cousin Michelle.
Yeah, Michelle. Yeah,
yeah, Michelle and Gary.
Yeah,
they moved absolutely back to California.
Small world.
So
yeah,
yeah.
So Jim, what can we expect from the Cowboy Way next Thursday?
Well, we've got. We're doing a bunch of stuff that we've been doing for a pretty good while, but Doug has got a brand new album coming out literally, I think he should be getting it tomorrow, so he'll have it next week. It's called A Cowboy Like Me, so there's a bunch of new stuff we're doing off of that. We've got a couple of new songs that I'm doing, too, so we've got kind of the standards that people know us for, but then some new things, too, so we're actually, don't tell anybody, keep this just between the three of us, but we're working on a new album, so.
Oh. Yeah,
and our 600,000 listeners.
That's really exciting. That's really exciting. Well, if you're listening and you are not too far away to be able to get in the car and come out to Old Town Newhall, call us for tickets at 661-255-7087. And if you say you heard it on the writer's block, it'll be get one ticket free.
Whoa. I heard it in the writer's block.
Oh, good. I can get in free.
But I'm going to be here. Well, I think you're always going to be there. Yeah, they charge you to come in and sing.
That's right.
God love capitalism.
Well, Jim, right. We know that you took out just a couple minutes to chat while you're breaking down from an earlier show, so we will let you get back to that. We thank you so much for calling in. And we look forward to being face-to-face in a week.
Yeah.
Well, looking forward to seeing you guys. And really, thanks for squeezing me in. I know you guys had to
make worries.
Adjustments, and I really appreciate it.
All we did was move Henry Park over a week.
Yeah.
Well, it's only Henry. That's right.
It's only Henry.
Well, actually, he sent me an email this morning. He says, can we postpone for a week?
Because... Oh, perfect.
Right.
So it worked out well. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling in.
Well, it's good talking to you guys. I look forward to seeing you next week.
Be good, my friend.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
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 Jim Jones.
Jim Jones.
And next week on the Writer's Block, we have Jillian Boyd and her writer, partner, Mark, and I'm so embarrassed I forgot his last name. But they're working on a TV show called Welcome to My Mansion. Right now, the first episode is available on YouTube, and it is absolutely hysterical.
I got to go check that out.
It is hysterical. But it is kind of like dry humor.
Uh-huh.
But the characters in this show are just like phenomenal. And you could just tell that they sat around and just guffawed while they were writing it. And we come to the close of another wonderful show here on the Writer's Block.
It's Thursdays are the highlight of my week.
It's well, you're a double show. You're a double show, mama. Yeah, because those that don't know, Bobby does a show in the morning at 10 o'clock Pacific, 12 Central with Gary Holt.
Yes.
On Equestrian Legacy.
So it's music and horses in the morning, and it's the written word in the evening.
Yeah.
And what could be better than that?
I can't think of anything. Hey. Okay, well, we're going to be out of here. We thank everybody for listening in. I hope you enjoyed our show tonight. We certainly did. We enjoyed bringing it to you, and we're wrapping up another Thursday night. And that's it for us, and I suppose it's probably it for you as well. Here we go.